Please pull up a seat and wind down.
Was your sojourn on Rakenjima a pleasant one?
The Golden Witch has invited you to a tea party.
We hope you choose to attend.
Hello, and welcome to a hidden tea party. My name is Courtney, I am the witch of video games, pronouns she, her, and these are my very intelligent guests.
Thank you. Why did that feel like a sarcastic?
What? I never. I know you've worked out so much stuff from...
Hi, my name's Jess, my pronouns are they, them, and after that introduction, the fact that I'm going to say that this reading really confused me feels, it doesn't feel great, I will say.
couldn't be me, I am so perfectly sorry. Rotating Oom and Echo in my mind, I understand it completely.
Oh good, I'm good. One of us is there.
Hi, my name's Rowan, and my pronouns are he, they.
Ooh.
Ooh. Have an update.
He, they era.
Yes.
Ooh. Yeah. For those who don't know me in real life, I'd like had he's floating around in the pronoun stack for a while, like below they. But very recently it's been promoted to like primary pronoun.
We love to see that.
Primary pronoun.
But, so you know, the listeners, as my dear companions and friends, very parasocial with you guys.
We don't mitchy-matchy in the same way anymore. Different.
No, sadly not.
We're covering a greater range. We've got a greater range of pronoun going on.
We got the trifactor, the he, she, they trifactor.
We're diverse now.
And now have the same pronouns as Battler, so...
Battler's a he, they, girly.
Absolutely. No questions.
Battler's a he, they lesbian.
Please no, I can't, I'm not strong enough. The implications of that are so far reaching that I think it fully uncorks my brain.
Uncorkney.
Oh my god. Oh, well, we continue to barrel towards the end of this book, really. Really do not have much left, which is kind of crazy. Everything's still kind of popping off, though.
Yeah, it was popping off last time, and I was like, yeah, and now it's popping off this time in a way that I'm like, yes? Question mark? What's happening?
Well, we're going to be here to do a recap, to maybe, like, clarify anything.
Yeah, you can tell me what's supposed to be happening. Maybe.
Yeah, because at this point there's really not much left for me to hide, if anything.
So do you want to tell the listeners what we read?
I will. We read two chapters. Chapter 14, Hachijo Ikkyuko, and chapter 15, Siege of the Fleet.
What just happened is we just got a reveal that the person that we've been seeing, who Ange had been hallucinating to be Hachijo Ikkyuko, isn't that person. There's another person.
No, they are Ikkyuko. Toya was the other. It's not.
Toya. They introduced themselves as Hachijo Toya, which Ange initially pointed out as a bit weird because Toya is generally a masculine name in Japanese.
Oh, interesting.
And said, oh, I was expecting a man. But now we have the reveal that that person is actually named Hachijo Ikkyuko, who, and Ikkyuko being a more typically feminine name in Japanese.
Okay. And because we had the reveal that Ange is dead, this is all witch truth. This is all made up. Like, every encounter that Ange has had with this person is made up, right?
Presumably. But that doesn't mean that the person doesn't exist.
And also, we don't we have a mysterious narrator here.
Yeah, so this is where... this is following immediately on from the scene where somebody wakes up in the middle of the road.
Yes.
That started at the end of the last chapter.
We don't know who this person is. All we know is that they are 18 years old. And
Ashijo that they're given the name off the road, basically. But like, what are you doing in the middle of the road? I'll take you.
And we know that she gives them the name Toya, which implies that the person is male because Toya is a
a
male name.
The entire premise of this basically is that the narrator doesn't remember who they are. The only thing they remember is that they're 18. And they've been told that they were in a car accident. And they were injured and possibly brain damaged.
Well, less that they were in, like, a car accident and more that they were just lying on the road.
Yeah, I think one of them says, Hashijo, I think, says, like, oh, you were probably hit by a car because you were lying in the middle of the road and you were injured.
Yeah.
This was the point, though, where I was like, right, what I think is happening here is Hashijo, Ikuko, I believe, from what we got in Anja's perspective when she visited Hashijo, even though that didn't actually really happen, Hashijo lived kind of near Najima.
Yeah.
And... so what I think this is I think this is a flashback to 1986, just after the Rokkenjima disaster. And this is a survivor who's essentially, like, been blown up by the explosion, blown into the sea, but not quite died, and, like, managed just about to, like, get to the mainland, and then collapsed. And doesn't remember anything. And at this point, I didn't know about the whole masculine name situation. I was like, they're 18 years old. I feel like this is either Sayo or Battler.
Although Sayo is either 16 or 19, yeah, depending on what age you give them of their two ages.
Battler was 18?
Battler's 18, okay. Jessica's 18, Ange is 18 as of 1998.
And I was wondering there, like, is this the one scenario in which there could be a survivor from Rokkenjima who Anja would actually want to meet? Because this is someone who hasn't contacted Anja because they don't know who they are. They don't know that they're part of it.
They've lost their memory.
Also, when Ikuko finds this mysterious person, it's raining. Which isn't, like, much of a tell, but, you know, there was a storm in 1986.
Yeah.
So, I guess it would make the reality that is, like, the hardest for Ange to see is, like, she's killed herself and Battler's still alive and she could have found Battler again, but she can't anymore because she's dead. That would be quite a tough one.
That's interesting. Yeah, so are you considering that this... because, like, we don't know if this is true. This could be a witch truth of Burn Castles. Or it could be a real truth that Burn Castle's like, here you go. I'm only going to reveal this to you now that it's too late. But yeah, that's what I was thinking at this point. Also, we get a bit of Hashijo Ikuko backstory, which I think is extremely funny. Which is basically...
yes, she's very funny.
She's part of a really rich family, but her parents basically got annoyed with her and kicked her out. But in the rich people sense, where they're like, we'll give you a mansion. Just live there. We don't want to fuck with you.
just don't leave the mansion. Just kind of vibe in this
away.
Mansion.
Get out of our sight. Live a lovely life in your own mansion. And it comes up as well because, like... When Toya's like, oh yeah, I was told I was hit by a car, they were like, what if Hashijo was the one who hit me with the car? And, like, they feel really terrible about it, so that's why she's taking me in. And then they were like, oh no, but, like, their car, like, Hachijo's car, it's undamaged. And I'm like, she's rich. She probably has about 6 cars. Like, that doesn't say anything. She probably hit you with a car and was like, send that one to the garage. We'll get out the other car. They won't know.
I mean, I guess it would make sense, given as to why Hachijo's just like, yeah, just stay here as long as you like. It's fine.
Yeah.
Help me write some books.
Yeah, and why also she's like not, you know, taking them to the hospital.
Yeah, she got a private doctor in and then paid them off not to say anything to anyone. So I'm like,
When the Rock and Jima mystery, like, is mentioned, the mysterious person gets a massive headache as well.
Yeah.
And is like, keep saying Anja's name. And and Ikuko's like, oh, I mentioned it a few days ago. Which means like it could be legitimately like, oh, that's a new story that's just happened.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, was like, because like the Hachijo we know from Anja's timeline is one who's already established as an author. She's already written multiple forgeries. She's got this whole cult following thing going on. Whereas the Hachijo we see in this is someone who like has never published any work because they don't feel like, because one manuscript got rejected and she was like, oh, I realise I'm an amateur at writing. I'm not actually very good. She's not obsessed with Rokuji because she's only just hearing about it. And I'm like, yeah, this makes me feel like this is a while ago.
To me, as I'm reading this, I'm thinking about like what is left for Umineko. I'm kind of metagaming a bit in that I know that there's not a lot of Umineko left. And the really the only big thing, unless it's gonna fucking pull the rug from under us, which I'm not discounting as a possibility.
Yeah.
The only big thing that it's got left is this like what actually happened on the day Anja like discovers the final truth thing. It will either happen or it won't. And so to me, if I was writing Umineko, everything from here on out would be linking into the idea of if this, what is happening in the final, like what the actual truth is. And either this is a foreshadowing for what the actual truth is, and this is like the painful thing for Anja and his battler. B, it's like, this is the best hint that we're gonna get because Anja isn't gonna open the fucking cat box and we're just gonna get like Ryukishi being like sliding this across to us. Or C, this is Burncastle trying to manipulate Anja by showing this. Or Battler trying to manipulate Anja by showing this. Being like, actually, Battler survived. You should open the box. All of this to me says, well, there's two people who are 18 on Rock and Jima. It would make a lot of sense if this is the survivor.
I will say, I made a note of this. So at some point, Troya has a bunch of flashbacks to like the island, like sees a lot of events, and every character sprite of the people on the island is shown except for Battlers.
Interesting. Yeah, there is a flash of lots of different people, and it didn't count all of them to be there. So that's
I was interested by this, so I checked all
the
of them.
The other reason I thought it would have to be Sayo or Battler is because basically the narrative explains that this person is desperately kind of really wants to know who they were, but every time they try and remember they get terrible headaches. But they get when they're remembering Rock and Jima, they remember specifically something to do with mysteries and fighting. And I'm like, this is Beatrice or Battler, it has to be. And weirdly enough as well, in this, like, Hachijo offers to pay for surgery that would help, like, fix the headaches. Yeah, it's really interesting. Like, one of the things that made me think maybe this was a kind of Sayo thing was they refuse because they don't want to harm their past self. And they see that as, like, kind of... they conceptualize their past as another self. And they don't want to hurt that by, like, having brain surgery, basically. And I was like, I'm still going with the Sayo DID kind of thing. So I was like, that kind of maybe links into that kind of thing again.
This is really interesting because I think you've touched on something really interesting there with the like DID thing. Because previously, when Sayo sort of let go of one of the personalities, for example, like Canon has died.
Yeah.
So if this is, for example, Battler can have died on the Rokkenjima of 1986 because the body can have sort of...
Like the identity of Battler
is
fundamentally dead.
Yeah, but then this person has like washed up in Ninjima and have become Hachijo Toya, and that's how all of these like red truths about like, oh, Battler's dead can exist when actually the like flesh shell...
Yeah, Battler's dead because this person doesn't go by Battler and doesn't know who that is.
Yeah. And I think that plays into like some of the stuff I feel
about. I realize I hadn't, like, this is very unlike me, but I hadn't actually thought about like any of the red truths when I was thinking about this. but yeah, like,
fair enough, there are a lot of them.
Yeah. That would fit, definitely.
We see Battler in the Golden Land. And if you imagine that the Golden Land is somewhere that like only dead people can go, then Battler has to be dead.
I think you could conceptualize this as Battler's body with somebody who doesn't have any of Battler's memories in it. Is that really Battler, especially when they're going through a dip by a different name and stuff? So there's a lot of identity stuff going on in here.
Yeah.
Identity stuff in Mayu Maneko? What?
It's established that Canon can die, but Sayo remain. And as a consequence, I don't think it's a step to be like, well, Battler can die, but
Toya remains.
Flesh remain.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
whatever you think is like... What I'm trying to get at is like, I don't know if there's like... Umineko believes in like a soul, and whether there's like an inherent part of a person that's like unable to be separated from them, or whether actually, you know, Battler is the soul, and then that sort of that's destroyed, and then Toya is a new soul.
I wonder if anyone's ever asked Ryokishi that before. Like, how do you conceptualize a soul in this? Do you? That would be cool.
I guess the idea of a soul is quite kind of like Judeo-Christian, so I don't know if he thinks in that way.
Ryukishi famously does not fuck with Christian mythology.
We have all this stuff with Toya and Ikuto.
I would like to point out, by the way, sorry, this is, before we move on from these two, this is a bugbear of mine. They,
Oh boy.
So, you know, it's kind of cute, actually, because Ikuko is there being like, I spend a lot of time writing, but I can't write good detective stuff, so Toya helps, and they make a cool writing team, and they write a cool mystery together, and then they celebrate and stuff. And then the scene in which Ikuko finds out about the Rokkenjima incident, she's looking on her computer, which the art clearly shows, where any time that she's talking about her computer is a typewriter, for a start. There is no computer on that desk. There is just a typewriter. And I was like, also, it's the 1980s. Okay, fair enough, she's rich. But, like, it's not going to be a laptop, is it?
I don't think the internet was a thing that you could like readily access news on in the 80s. Let me have a look.
No, she'd be like on like IRC chat rooms.
She'd have like a big old bulky huge desktop like thing, even as like that would it would be, even if it was state of the art rich person tech and stuff. So I was just like but I was still just like looking at it being like, nope, that's still a typewriter on that desk though.
According to Wikipedia, the first newspaper to go online was the Columbus Dispatch on July 1st, 1980. So it is believable that you could access online news, however, not by a fucking typewriter.
Yeah, that's basically all I had to say. It took me out of the illusion, I'm afraid, Umineko. When I was like, she's just typing up her own news article because that's a typewriter.
But yeah, she's probably in like a bunch of chat rooms because that was the internet in the 80s.
Yeah.
We come out of this scene after Toya has like a sort of breakdown and instead sort of go to the Golden Land, where Ange has kind of just arrived. Turns out she's been fished out of the Sea of Emptiness to the Golden Land.
So, the way that these scenes transitioned, I've got it straight now in my head, but the way that the transition between these scenes happened wildly confused me. Because we essentially go straight from Toya's, like, big headache moment, remembering all of the people in Rokkenjima and saying Anja, to Anja's point of view arriving in the Golden Land, which for a good couple of days I was like, oh, so Toya's supposed to be Anja, which doesn't make any sense, and that's why I was so confused.
I can completely get why that you made that.
I think it's just meant to be a transition.
Yeah, it's just the way that the transition was found, like, made me think that those two scenes were connected in a way that they aren't. Because I was like, wait, so is Toya Anja? Did Okuko find her on the road after she jumped off the building and she isn't really dead? But all of the timeline stuff just does not work if you see it like that way.
Yeah.
I was baffled. and I was also kind of confused at the time, like, why we would be seeing Anja's perspective, like how she got out of the sea of fragments so quickly and ended up in the Golden Land, because I feel like she wasn't supposed to be there. I don't know.
This is why I was like, okay, how does this link to the rest of the book?
Yeah.
Because if it was Anja, I don't understand the purpose of showing us that.
Yeah.
Hence why I was like, right, this has to be significant in some way. And I hope to fuck Ryukishi doesn't have another new character to show up.
A new OC.
I'm looking at Courtney and I feel like there's more. I feel like there's more, Rowan.
We have like...
Well, okay, I will say this. You've probably noticed this, but in this episode, there have been no new OCs.
I know.
So far.
Unless Toya is someone we don't know, but that would be weird, wouldn't it?
That's why.
Can you imagine?
Like,
Toya's just a random dude with no connection to anything. But
I was like, that would be the only other like thing it could be, because then this person is like significant to the end of Umineko, and I would feel very fucking cheated if the ending of Umineko is a revelation of my OC.
I wouldn't be surprised if, like, you know how there's like the Great Court of Heaven and all of the demons and stuff, like, there's Delaina talks about her boss, like God or whatever. I wouldn't be surprised if a god turned up. I still want it to be Arthur Conan Doyle, God of Detectives, shows up right at the end to fix everything. But
if it was someone who's been foreshadowed, like Delaina's boss, I could forgive it.
Yeah.
But if it's just somebody like completely out of the blue, that's what's gonna fuck me off.
Yeah. Unless they don't actually really mean anything and it's just a flourish, like, rather than like a big plot thing. If you know what I mean, like, I could maybe see that. But yeah.
It's someone whose name is there is no 19th person. Wait, no 19th person. So when everyone says there is no 19th person on this Rokkenjima, somebody named no 19th person is on this Rokkenjima.
Yeah. I like it.
And that's the culprit.
Don't.
But also, I also want to say, like, I want in red that, like, what have we got? We've got about 92 OCs at this point. So it was like, there is no 93rd person on this Umineko. um, But yeah, so aside from the fact that for a while I thought Andrew was supposed to be Toya, this scene also confused me because there was that whole bit about how Andrew was cast into the Sea of Fragments and couldn't be in the Golden Land with her family because she tried to see the single truth instead of, like, be with their memories or whatever. And then she just instantly is with them anyway. And so I was like, what was that all about? Like, I don't know what's going on here. I like to think Lambda Delta's in the background with a net in the Sea of Fragments being like, whoop.
Well, this isn't Anja, this is a piece.
Ooh. This is really Burncastle dressed up as Anja.
Because the shit Anja's saying, like, I will live. Like, you didn't know, did you, bestie?
Yeah.
Fucking chuck that one away. I've remembered how much everyone loves me.
Anja's reunion with all of these people made me very uncomfortable. Because basically what she does is she's like, oh yeah, Battler, you were right. I loved everyone and they were all really nice to me. And actually I was the problem in the abusive relationship with Ava had with me. Because if I just called her mom, then she would have loved me and that would have fixed everything. Let's skim over the part where, you know, parents aren't supposed to abuse their children, no matter what they're called. Anyway, so I was like, yikes, what the fuck is going on?
I don't think that's the take. I like to think that Ava and Ange's, like, relationship was mutual.
I don't know that you can.
I don't think it can be because Ange was
when
six.
One of them is a parent and one is a child. Yeah,
yeah. Like, I agree that, like, they probably had similar feelings towards each other, but as an adult, Ava had a big responsibility to not be like that to a kid.
He has full custody of Ange.
I think part of the issue is that we only see Ava's behaviour to Ange from the biased view of Ange.
True. But I'm more inclined to believe her than...
I was going to say, Ava. That's a fucking can of worms to open because the only behaviour we see from anyone ever is from a biased view. We have to piece together that Ava has to have acted in a way in order to get Anja to view
that's
her like
the
that.
Can of worms that Umineko wants you to open.
Right.
That's the whole point of the book.
Ava has to have acted in a way that has made Anja see her like that.
Hmm.
But Anja's coming into the relationship with the baggage of being like, why did you survive? Are you here and my parents are not?
I don't know that at 6 years old, your capacity, like you're able to hold grudges in quite that virulence. I feel like if Ava was a kind and loving parent from day one, Anja would have at least a moderate view of Ava of like, well,
but again, this is the whole point of the story is we both have different perspectives on this relationship.
Yeah, I guess I'm just like bristling really easily at the idea of like,
we don't know that Ange had those feelings towards Ava at age 6. Ange says that she did, but that's 18-year-old Ange.
Yeah.
So we don't know how that relationship went at all. We have a perspective from a character who has very tinted memories of this person.
I think it's difficult as well, given that every memory or every scene we have of Ava is obviously biased in some way. But Ava is not a nice person in any of them. So whereas Anja, you know, I wouldn't say she's perfect or anything, but she's not actively abusive to the people around her. So
take like Jessica, right? Jessica is somebody who has like strong positive traits and strong negative traits throughout this book.
Yeah.
But every time we get a new perspective on Jessica, there is some form of moderation. Sometimes people are saying Jessica's awful and like a disgrace to the Yushiromiya name and her behaviour is horrid. And sometimes people are saying Jessica's great to hang out with and she's my favourite cousin.
Yeah.
But like, we get moderation. If Ava was anything but a heinous bitch, we would get some form of moderation, I think. But yeah, sadly,
the depiction no of one, Ava no from basically everyone's perspective is incredibly intelligent, massively manipulative, and nasty to
But people. We also get this idea that she wants to paint herself as a villain to hide the truth.
Yeah.
That this is an image she's purposefully cultivated.
And I think it depends
to protect Ange from whatever the truth
and
is.
And I think right. that will depend on what the truth is to me as to whether I think that's... I still don't think it's the right thing to do, even no matter what the truth is, but like...
Ava might have ulterior motivations aside from like sheer malice
yeah.
for acting the way she did towards Ange, but I do not believe that she was a good parent to
yeah,
Ange.
Me neither.
And I, as a consequence, I don't think it's justified because I don't.
Ange resents Ava for sending her to boarding school.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it possible that Ava was like, this kid clearly does not like living with me. Maybe it'll be better off if I send her so she's not living with me and she can get a good education at this, like, expensive boarding school.
It's the bit before that where they hate living together that's more of the issue than the boarding
but
school
like,
bit.
It's clearly because Ange hates her because she's not her parent and thinks that she took away her parents.
At 6 years old...
What should Ava have done in this situation? What would you have suggested that Ava
Being a
would
better
have done?
Mother and not abusive towards Anja.
Yeah.
Because at 6 years old, the you're not my mum is not a enough of a block to begin. People get fostered and like adopted at 6 years old and can learn to love their
We
parents.
Have no idea what this relationship was like. We have no idea when it soured. We have no idea the timeline on anything. And all of Ava's abusive behaviors are told to us by Ange. And it's never physical. It's always emotional. Is she saying stuff like, oh, she like likes to pick up, she likes to say things when I do something wrong to make me feel bad. How do we know Ava's intention was to make her feel bad?
Because she's Ange's parent. And so it doesn't matter how, like... whether your intention is just, I'm a little bit annoyed, or this is how I think parenting is, being vindictive and, manipulative
towards your
child is never
okay. We don't know that she was being vindictive. Where do we know she was being purposefully vindictive?
Ava's behaviour has to have, like, Anja's perspective has to be founded on Ava's behaviour. I do not believe you're not my quote-unquote real mum is enough
of Ava's
of a...
motivations. We don't know that at any point.
I don't care about her motivations. It's still not enough to abuse a child.
Yeah.
No motivation is
okay.
But
we don't know that it was intended to be abuse.
It doesn't matter if it's intended to be abuse. If it is abuse, though, is the thing. Like, it doesn't need to be intended to be malicious if it comes across as malicious.
Anja's
opinion
of Ava has
to come from somewhere. Okay, but
like,
what was Ava supposed to do? She did the correct thing and removed herself from the situation. Like, she clearly could not handle being a parent. She could see that, like, the effect that what was going through this child.
Honestly,
she was like, cool.
Honestly, I think given, like, the point where she decided, let's send her to boarding school, was probably a good choice.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
But everything
that's
before
what I'm saying.
That,
Ava...
bad.
Okay. This discussion started because Courtney said something about, like, oh, it was, like, an... I can't remember your exact phrase, but I think the core of my argument is that I cannot read this relationship because there is such a huge power imbalance between these characters
yeah.
and this relationship is now so filled with animosity. I cannot put Anja at fault for that. Because for the majority of their relationship, she was a child, and Ava has always had insane amounts of power over Anja.
I also...
And so, while Anja's hatred may sometimes have just been because she hated Ava, and she may have, like, had very unkind readings of Ava's behaviour, I cannot put Anja at fault for those feelings, because they've spent so long unequal to one another.
I think the main problem with this section that makes me so uncomfortable is, yes, we do not have Ava's perspective on anything that happened with Anja. We do have Anja's perspective, in which she is extremely heavily a victim here. I am very uncomfortable with the concept of being like, actually, all of that was her fault.
I'm not saying it was her fault. I'm saying that I can understand having a reframed perspective on your upbringing when you get older. I think that's a thing that happens to a lot of people. It happened to me. I have a different perspective on my parents' actions than I did 10 years ago. And I think that's more what this is trying to invoke rather than forgiving your abusers.
If it is, I don't think it's done well. Because that's not what I was getting from this at all. It seems to put the entirety of their relationship on. Like, oh, Ava would have treated you better if Anja had treated Ava better. Which is not how parenting is supposed to happen.
Anja we get here isn't far removed, like not much time at all has passed from this Anja to the Anja that had the conversation with Ava on her deathbed, like a few minutes.
Time is very subjective here because we're in the meta world,
right? I just don't think like this level of 180. I think this is a piece. I don't think this is Anja. I don't think this level of 180 is in character for her at all.
No.
And I don't think it's... Yeah.
I can't imagine an Anja who spent the entirety of Battler's Game Board with the Halloween party being like, this isn't how my family acted, this isn't them, would then go, actually, like, after all of that had happened and she died, was actually like, oh yeah, no, actually, that was how it was. Because surely you'd have been reminded of it when they were showing you it and not denied it so much if you did actually remember that's how it was.
But we're forgetting she's been shown one of the most important things on the game board. She's been shown the actual truth of the incident and hated it so much she jumped off a building.
I mean, she was going to jump off the building anyway, but... yeah, I don't know what could be in that to have changed everything so much. Like...
Well, let's say, like, hypothetically, it was what we saw in episode 7, as, like, an example.
So, Kyrie and Rudolph killed everyone.
If you'd seen all that, would that make you reframe some of the behaviours that Ava had experienced trying to parent you?
Yeah. It wouldn't make me like her more, though.
I'm not asking you to like her, I'm asking you to kind of understand why Ange is having this perspective, you know?
If the Rockenjima murders are a big enough deal to make Ava a feminist, also a big enough deal in order to make her a horrible person. And so I don't think that her... If it was the fucking nice version of Ava from previously, sure, that's very discordant with her behaviour after the murders... But that doesn't change... That shouldn't make Anja be like, well, all of that horrible stuff you did is excuse because
you were
nice. Here's
the thing I need you to, like, think about. Mm. Anja's feelings towards Ava at this point don't really matter in a material sense other than her own personal outlook. She doesn't have to deal with Ava anymore. Ava is dead. She only has to, like... She can reframe those memories of Ava however she wants to help her move forward with her life.
Which is over. Because she is dead.
Okay, but like, this is kind of what the book's trying to get at, though. Is that, yes, it's possible that Ava was a manipulative piece of shit and hated Ange the whole time. However, it's also possible that she had her best interests at heart and was just struggling a lot. And Ange has made the decision here to accept that version of events, and that's what the scene is trying to portray to us.
I think if it was trying to portray that, it should have said that. Because...
Yes, but when has Umineko literally said anything?
The enormous 180 just makes me feel like this is massively out of character.
But Buncastle has fished Peace Anja out of, like, the Sea of Fragments in order to make Battler feel more bad. She's doing what Battler did to Anja to Battler in order to punish Battler for having been a fucking idiot earlier in this chapter.
Yeah.
It was Lambda Delta who fished her out, not Burncastle.
They're both kind of vindictive, so.
But yeah, so this was all very uncomfortable and didn't seem any, like, right to me in any way.
I can understand the reading that you have explained to us, Courtney. I just don't think that this scene does a very good job of portraying that.
Yeah,
reading.
I can see it. I don't agree with it, and I don't think that this scene portrays that well. Yeah.
If that's what Ryukishi wanted us to take away, he needed to do something.
I think what would have helped, honestly, is if we actually saw what she was thinking at this point. If she went into this and she was like, actually, this has changed what I saw, which, you know, we don't get to know yet, that's fine, whatever. What I saw has changed everything.
She says the truth wasn't worth anything at all. The truth is always the past. Dwelling in the past means that she can't move on. That's what this is. This is her trying to move on and not dwell on the past.
Okay, I'll rephrase that. If she actually raised her thoughts like a normal human person so that you would understand what those words actually meant, then then I might have understood her motivations here.
Okay, I do understand we are reading something quite dense.
I think I struggle when things are overly metaphorical like this, because it just doesn't, you know how the whole allusions to illusions things, I was just like, this just doesn't mean anything to me. It just flows straight over me. It may as well not have happened.
Right.
So, like, that doesn't read as her opinion to me. That's just her being like, forgive and forget, I suppose. And I'm like, what? What? Where did that come from?
I guess the way I read it is, like, she's found the truth and just been like, what was the point in this? Why did I need this? It's something horrible I did not need to know.
Yeah.
So why should I focus on these kind of old things that have no bearing on my current life?
Yeah.
Why am I so fixated on whether these dead people were good people or not?
Yeah, like, I think if she'd said that more clearly, I'd have swallowed this scene better. I'd still been like, what on earth did you see to make you change your opinion so much?
That's not like Umineko's bad. That's more like, I can't wait to find out what's going on. Rather than like, I think the problem that we're having with this scene is like, this is a bit of a crunch point of like Ryukishi writing, trying to be like so mysterious and obscure and poetic that he kind of like ends up obfuscating his meaning, and then it's really difficult to read. And like sometimes that does work in his favor because it means he gets to sort of drag the mystery out a bit more. Yeah. But we're not at the point in the book where dragging the mystery out a bit more is of use to anybody.
Like, we need the concrete stuff now because it's the end.
And say that poetically if you want, but you probably need to be clear enough with these things that three people reading this scene don't take away three
completely
wildly
different
opinions. Because we all three were like, something completely different is happening here, to the point where I didn't think this was a real character.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying that like Courtney's reading isn't an interesting or a cool interpretation of this, because I think it is, like,
you have to work quite a bit with what you're given to get to where I think he wants you to go, which is very his writing.
And I'm
style.
Also like, it also depends how much slack you're willing to give to people. Like, you know, without love it cannot be seen. I'm not willing to give any love to Ava.
That's fair. I am, but only because we're getting to some of my endgame thoughts here. One of my favorite things about Umineko is that, like, you get so many subjective views of a character, and it ties in so well to the theme of truth is subjective. And I think that's why I kind of love this scene, is it's because it's Ange coming to that realization that she doesn't have to believe in an absolute truth. And in fact, for her, to help her move on, it's better to think of truth as something where there can be multiple things that are true.
Yeah.
Which is something this whole game has been trying, like, episode 8 has just been them trying to hammer that in a lot. I think this is one of the downsides of taking such big gaps between readings as well, is I think a lot of this is helped by some of the stuff earlier in the episode, but it's been a while since we've read that. So
I also think it's just there's some characters that I'm much more willing to have different truths on than others.
We're unitedly fuck George squad, right? Like,
yeah.
Like,
yeah,
even our kindest squad reading of George is still that he's a creep.
Yeah. Whereas, like,
okay, I can give a kinder reading of George. I don't want to.
I'm noticing something that I'm finding really difficult about the ending of Umm and Echo that I'm gonna lampshade here, because I think it's important. You know this about everything that's coming out of my mouth. This is what I'm gonna call the Dead Poets Society problem. Dead Poets Society is one of the most important movies to me of all time. It has a massive emotional impact on me and I love it, and I refuse to ever watch it with any of my friends because I could not bear getting to the end of Dead Poets Society and me being in like floods of tears and my friend being like, well, that was a bit shit, wasn't it? I think we're hitting this problem where, like, every time I'm saying, like, wow, that was a bit shit, I'm, like, imagining Courtney beside me on the sofa crying over the ending of Dead Poets Society, like, this has a deep emotional impact on me and has changed my life for the better. And I'm like, oh, I'm so fucking sorry, bestie.
I guess Umm and Echo to me is one of those pieces of media where I think what's so interesting about it is so many people have so many different takes on the characters, yeah, and the way everything's kind of laid out. So I think I'd hate for you to think I can't give my opinion here because Courtney's gonna be upset.
Oh no, don't worry. I hate this too
much.
That's
good.
someone needs to critique it, and if that's gotta be me, I'll fucking take the L. I just I wanted to make sure I stated, like, I know you really care about this thing, bestie, and I'm not saying you're wrong.
Yeah, but
I
don't want you to feel that, like, because I really like it, that, like, you can't critique it, because I think you should and can.
On the note of critiquing you, this might not be a critique, we'll see. I have refined my thoughts about this scene and things to do with this that make me uncomfortable. I think it's the thought that I like the idea of multiple truths can exist, especially around other people. Like, for instance, you get the whole Beatrice is introduced, you're like, this is a nasty murder witch, and then you're like, oh, actually this is a deeply complicated individual with lots of different stuff going
on. Yeah, that fucking slaps.
What worries me in this bit is that what we are getting is we've had 8 episodes of look at how abusive these characters are, and now we're getting here being like, but was it really abuse? And I'm like, yes. Yes, it was. and I'm worried about is that they're gonna be like, actually abusive subjective, and that the takeaway from this is gonna be maybe they weren't so bad, these awful people. And I'm like, ugh.
I guess for me the big take is that, like, Ange needs to move on, really, and this is a way of her being able to move on.
Yeah. May I hypothesize that we have two people who have very strong opinions on how people should move on from this kind of situation and who perhaps feel that no forgiveness, no surrender, and also seeing somebody as complicated and trying their best are both, like, central and important like versions of their own truths, and as a consequence you're both going to walk away from this with very different feelings about how Anja should be going about her approach to this scenario.
I see it this way, specifically because Ava is dead and all the people on Rokkenjima are dead. So forgiving Ava now in this hypothetical scenario where Anja's still alive doesn't really materially affect anything. She's not opening herself back up to be abused by
her. No, it doesn't. But then again, not forgiving her would also not open her up to anything. I think there's because, like, obviously Andrew's arc has been a lot of I hate Ava. All I care about is hating Ava and wanting revenge on Ava. Like, I think taking that down to I don't forgive what she did, but she's not my life anymore, would also be a nice moving on point. Like, I'm not saying anyone has to do that, but like, it doesn't require a full 180 to be a moving on situation, I don't think.
I think like this way of presenting it is the best way to line up with Umineko's themes. Mm. But I do think there is probably a version of this scene where she's like, you have no power over me anymore, and I don't need to worry about you anymore, yeah. Basically.
There's also a read in which she's like, I agree that you may have tried your best and you absolutely fucked me over because of it. And it was awful. And so I still don't forgive you. But I'm moving on.
Yeah, but it's like, it's more of a like, I don't see you as like some like malicious witch out to ruin my life. Yeah. I see you as someone who tried and failed.
Wish Anja had said those words instead of the ones she said.
I know. I wish she'd just kind of talked like a normal person and told us what was going on in her head.
Well, that's what this pod is for. It's to help you break down the incredibly dense piece of literature that is Umineko. So Ryukishi has said that he's surprised that anyone has read a translated version of this visual novel and understood anything. So,
good, because I haven't. I've still decided the funniest interpretation of this scene is that this is Peace, Anja, and Burncastle's puppeting her, making her say this stuff to Battler to torture him. It's to show Battler how stupid his approach was.
It's not doing a very good job because Battler seems very pleased right now, so.
This is the part of the podcast where I decide to bring up a completely different piece of media that reminds me of this piece of media.
Oh, my favourite.
I'm just opening Steam because I can't remember what the fucking game is called. but basically, there was this...
I'm so worried we're exhausting all our material for the like wrap-up
episode.
Oh, don't
worry, there's going to be plenty still. So basically, there's this game... what the fuck is it called? Heaven Will Be Mine, it is called. It is...
Okay, I'm unfamiliar with
this. It is an indie
this.
Game. It's a kind of queer lesbian sci-fi thing where there are, like, three girls and they're on different sides of potentially a war and they have different personalities and maybe transform into spaceships. I've played this game. Every single bit of narration and dialogue is so heavily metaphorical that I had no idea what was happening the entire way through. I was there being like, is this a sex scene? Has she just turned into a robot? What's going on? Like, this might be the autism, but I did manage, I can do metaphors. I have an English literature degree, but like, There's an extent to which, like, if all you're doing is turning up to someone and being like, ah, the clouds have parted, and, and like, just like nonsense like that, where I'm like, yeah, but like, what are you actually trying to say to each other? Where are you? What's going on? And I was like, the atmosphere of the game was great, but I just did not know what any of the plot was. And I sometimes feel a little bit like that in Ryukishi's writing as well, there's a lot of fancy words going on, but I'm like, okay, but what are you trying to say with this?
There's his time for Rowan piece of media. There's a French language James Bond spoof named OSS Sondicept. And in the first film, there is a section where there's all the like bosses of like the CIA and MI5 and like all the different intelligence agencies, and they're all sat around in a room and they're all saying to things like, oh yes, cigars are bigger than cigarettes, and do have a lighter, no, I prefer matches, great until it's raining, etc. Because that's the sort of code phrases and one-liners that come out in spy movies. And they're just going around sort of saying these things to each other, and the joke is that they're all fucking nonsense.
Yeah, that's how things like this read eventually. It's like, I'm just like, you're saying so many different things that actually none of this means anything, and you may as well just be saying any words.
one of the versions of that, like, there was a meaning to what was going on, but it took quite a lot of, like...
But again, you already had to understand the meaning beforehand to get it. So with this, it's like, I always had to already know how Anja felt to understand her opinions on stuff.
Anyway, Lambda Delta's like, I'm going to send you to the City of Books because I want to see Barncastle turn you into mincemeat. Shout out to me for misreading this word as Minecraft.
Wow. we bookended
Minecraft
it.
Just come up quite a lot in our podcast.
Rowan Minecrafts once again. I can't believe this.
Umineko, I'm now going to start telling people Umineko is primarily a book about Minecraft.
So Andra sort of made amends with everyone, and they go, her and Battler and Lambda Delta all go to the City of Books. However, Erica Ferrudo's fleet has shown up with a bunch of goats ready to devour the Golden Land.
Boy, has it.
She's
got a hat on with what appears to be Jack Skellington wearing a chef's hat.
Yeah, it's a weird ass pirate hat.
The feathers are coming directly out of the top.
And she's like
like a mohawk.
And she's like, oh, the City of Books have decided your game board, Beatrice, is like really good. So we want to claim it all and take it to our city so that everyone can enjoy it, not just you. And if you say no, we'll destroy it. And I was like, that's extremely British Museum of you.
For real.
Erica is now British and must therefore be destroyed.
This is actually, you know what, in the Courtney's live action Umineko remake, Erica should be British. only white person allowed
Perfect.
In the fucking thing is Erica who's
is Erica
British.
Fruta. What? Yeah, sure, that sounds fun. Actually, she's just there to do a colonialism on the game board.
Absolutely.
Beatrice pulls out her best actor's Oscar and comes up with this story that she wants to surrender. She's like, she's so sick of it. But Lambda Delta, who, as we know, is not here, Beatrice is going to pretend that Lambda Delta is here, and Lambda Delta wants to see a fight. She's out for blood. She's calling her friends, who are apparently notoriously bloodthirsty. And everyone on the island is kind of arguing about whether they should fight it out or whether they should surrender. And Beatrice is like, can you just give us a bit of time to, like, work this out? Preferably without a time limit, so we can... so no one gets stressed. There's a ploy to, like, stall
See,
for time.
This is one of the bits as well where, like, Ryakishi did spell it out quite nicely, because he was like, Beatrice is like, yeah, I'm tired, this board's already done what it needed to be. And I was like, that's a surprising thing to say. Is she lying by any chance? And the narration is like, she is lying. And I was like, good to know. There we go.
Ryukishi can actually say.
I was like, actually, that one was a bit more obvious, and I probably didn't need that one, but like.
I guess because this isn't about the themes, he's okay to say.
I know,
say.
But yeah. and it basically says, like, Beatrice is trying to distract Erica. And I'm like, ah, yes, I see. So they stage a fake argument.
Every character, every OC is just arguing for stuff that they do not actually care about.
And they are trying to cover up the fact that Battler and Lambda Delta, who are supposed to be there, are not there. And this is the only scenario in which having 92 OCs works super well. Because if there were 10 people here, it would be blatantly obvious that 2 people were missing. But Erica, even though she is hearing people directly say, I don't think that's true, Battler, she hasn't noticed that he isn't there because he's lost in the sea of other people. Which is extremely funny. but also very stupid.
It's the payoff for the million OCs. We did it, guys. We got to, like, the Zephyr payoff.
And Furfa are there, like, cheerleading the whole thing, being like, we're not helping. We're just here to be, just, like, have our pom-poms and go, look at the argument. Also, Goda is rubbish at committing to the bit. Kinzo's like, you loser loving fool, I'll take you down. And he's like, oh, okay.
More on Goda later. But right now, we're going to the City of Books. Battler and Lambda Delta are there to get the...
Yeah, they want the key because the diary's apparently in the human world right now, I think.
Yes.
But the key is being kept separate because Featherine wants to reunite the key with the diary to open it in the big ceremony. So they're like, if we steal the key, she can't open the diary. So yeah, one thing we skipped over is basically their whole plan is that Anja's like, I know what's in the cat box, but I don't think anybody else should. So if we steal the key, then nobody else gets the reveal, and that's good. I don't know why they care about whether other people know what's in the box or not.
Anja wants to kind of maintain the, like, closed cat box of...
We don't know why. Presumably it's got something to do with what's in it. I don't know.
Yeah, she obviously did not like what was inside.
There's also this thing at one point where they say, like, oh yeah, she should hold on to the love of her family. It will stop her killing herself. I'm like, but she already did. Is this a rewriting history thing? Are we going back in time to save Anja's life?
Was her dying a witch truth?
I don't know what's happening, Connie. It's so confusing. This game
is
makes
it possible
no
that
sense.
It was a witch truth?
I'm so tired. I just want someone to tell me something that's true. And I don't know if any of these things are true anymore.
It's okay. It will kind of get resolved. Anyway. So.
It will kind of get resolved, says a woman who's read the entire book.
It'll kind of be resolved so long as we read 3 chapters of the manga and look at several fan websites afterwards, probably is the answer to that.
Battler, Lambda and Anja are sneaking into the City of Books, and Burncastle is freaking out because she's heard that Lambda's friends are going to show up in the Golden Land.
She's ringing
land.
Them all up, being like, don't come!
Yeah, and she's like, fuck, how do I use a phone? I never use this because I don't have any friends.
Which is actually really quite sad, but also we know why, because... She's bad.
Yeah, because she sucks. Yeah. Meanwhile, the guardian of the key room, Ava Beatrice, decides to kill all of Burncastle's cats who are guarding the key room also as kind of like a face turn, I guess.
It's weird because the cats like morph together and instead of making a big cat, they turn into like a whale. And I'm like, okay, weird choice. But she crushes it with a big truth web.
I guess like Rikishi was like, what's a big animal?
Yeah, if you is 700 cats not really a whale? No, is the answer. No, it's not Rikishi, but sure.
If they like arrange themselves in like a whale formation. And Ava Beatrice is also leaving like little web like arrow markers and stuff to point the trio.
This is another bit where Andrew's like, oh, Eva Beatrice wrote this, which means we can trust her because she's been on my side all along. And I'm like, okay. If you say so.
That is, you know, you say that as a joke, but that's literally what the answer is. It's if you say so. And she's decided it's the truth, so it's the truth now.
Okay, whatever. Meanwhile, Erica's like, sitting in the Golden Land watching this fake argument while Runaway does magic tricks for her and serves her tea.
However, Goda does a classic Goda moment.
Goda does his biggest whoopsie yet.
Yeah.
Which I love that it's him that messes it up. I love that it's him. He's so bad at everything.
He accidentally takes the opposite position to the one he took earlier, and Erica, having perfect memory, picks up on
this. Yeah, he's like, as I've been saying all along, and then she's like, wait! You change sides. And he's like, and they're all like, for fuck's sake, Goda, all you had to do was remain consistent.
And she put together the Battler and Lambda Delta aren't here. Lambda Delta was never going to send anyone.
Yeah, she doesn't. What's funnier is that she has noticed people talking to Battler and Lambda. What she hasn't actually noticed up until this point is that they weren't there. She just noticed they hadn't responded. Because she still can't fucking see them through the crowd.
The alternative, like, humorous thing is if, like, because the way this is presented is, like, people on screen, like, coming up on a visual novel, this is also what Burncastle sees. Like, Burncastle's way of perceiving reality is through visual novel format. Ergo, people can be present in a scene, but if they don't speak, they're not shown on screen. Yeah. Ergo, Erica only knows people are in a room if they say something, which is why it's important to, like, everybody give their opinion on something so that Erica knows who's in the room.
Which is why the novel is so bloated and long, because every time someone says something, every other character has to say something in response.
Yeah, so Erica knows who's in any given room. Yes,
that's wonderful.
So they're gonna fight now, because Erica's
Erica's in fight
Beatrice
mode.
Dissolves the illusion by screaming, "Wash your face in miso soup," at Erica.
Yes!
Soup Mancer Beatrice is back. We're full circle.
Yep.
She's gonna use her soup tidal wave to destroy the fleet.
Ryukishi really is a dedicated listener to the pod. He's doing all of this for us.
Actually, that's true. The final, the like ending of Umineko, all of our like long term bits have come in packed. Like fucking our Minecraft, human soup chair shit. What other fun
Goated as a whoop
bits
Goated
as a whoop that we've done? Yeah. This is everything. This is all we've ever needed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I take it back. This is a well written ending.
Meanwhile, back in the City of Books, Burncastle has realised what Lambda Delta is up to and tracks down the trio, and we get a witch fight!
Witch fight.
The way that the witch fight happens is basically like Lambda says to Battler and Anja, like, one of us is going to have to go and distract Burn. And like, for the other ones to go and get the key. And so Battler and Anja like argue about which of them it should be. And then Lambda's like, no, we do rock, paper, scissors. And it's supposed to be between two of them, but then Lambda also joins in. And they use a really weird rule of rock, paper, scissors that I've never done before, where she essentially declares that they're all going to choose paper at the beginning. And so none of them do, naturally. Anja and Battler choose rock, because they're both trying to lose. Lambda chose scissors, because she knows they're both trying to lose and she wants to lose more. And then she was like, I also might actually win against Burncastle, whereas you two will just, she'll kill you and then leave. And I'm like, fair.
She literally says, the only reason you were like able to fight witches on Rock and Jima is because the game board put you on the same level.
Yeah.
Like here, you're just powerless. They have a very fun witch fight with cats turning into whales with sharp teeth.
People turning into candy. Black holes appearing.
Like, animations happening.
There do be.
Yeah, this is the best PowerPoint I've ever seen.
The candy looked like rainbow drops, which is such a callback to my childhood, because that was like, I remember like buying rainbow drops constantly.
Meanwhile, back on the Golden Land, we're having the Erica versus Beatrice and other people fight.
Yeah, Erica's really leaning into the pirate thing, which I don't know how I feel about.
But then she takes off the pirate hat.
She like conjures some fucking boats, I guess, and then they go away, and then she's like, oh yeah, actually, I'm gonna go real goth with it, and we're gonna have like the fucking red moon and the scythe and stuff, and I'm like, okay.
It's also funny because Beatrice and Virgilia pull out their set from the first witch fight of the whole game. Like, Beatrice gets out her war towers, the Yu-Gi-Oh cards are really on the field, there's the smothered mate spear of Virgilia and her weird little Ares horse thing. And I was like, where were these? Like, why didn't they get these out when they were defending, like, the golden, like, when they were defending from the goats originally? They just didn't do anything before.
Well, because they were trying to open the portal to the Golden Land.
Oh, yeah.
The whole aesthetic is giving, like, really overworked romantic goth. Like, My Immortal aesthetic is going down with the, like, hot pink and the lace.
Yeah.
The scythe.
And... it's very good.
And the then Erica sides like, both of the shooting towers at her. Down. And,
yeah.
Yeah, everyone gets out their various things, their various magical bits.
And the goat tsunami is engulfing the island. Literally described as a goat tsunami, by the way.
Because, you know, the fact that we don't no longer comment on something like that really shows how far we're into this now.
We're in the deep end.
Like, yeah. The goat tsunami, of course. We all know it.
We know it. You know it and love it.
Erica says, I am Farudo Erica, Witch of Truth. This moment marks the dismantling of the Golden Land by truth. Dust to dust, illusions to illusions. I'll end your daydream for you. Come and try and remember. Ghosts remember how you died so long ago. And I'm like, okay. Nice dust to dust, illusions to mention. Glad that was...
Because Will's here, so she's going to kill him too. Oh, just in case anyone was wondering, by the way, the weird sexual tension between Burncastle and Lambda Delta is not gone when they fight each other. It's just also violent.
Yeah.
Which I'm surprised I brought up and not Rowan, honestly, but maybe you skipped through so much of that.
It's kind of part of the course.
I know. Did you read the specific line where Burncastle says she'd skewer Lambda Delta through the butt and hang her by her bed and kiss her goodnight every night? Yeah, that was nice. That was not good.
Yeah, very classy, that Ryukishi.
Yeah.
Love my thousands of year old
children. Sexy children.
Well, on that note, let's go. We're nearly done.
So, what have we got left? We've got a couple of chapters and some tea parties. Is that it?
Here's our last reading. We have the last chapter. Chapter 16, Andra's Choice. Mm-hmm. At the end of this chapter... there will be a choice.
Do we get to make it?
Yeah. You are free to... I want you to do at least one of the choices. If you want to do both, that's fine.
I'm probably going
to... But I want you to read kind of as much... like, read to the end of whatever choice you're given. You will only get tea parties for one of the choices.
Right.
So if you get the tea parties, do them. If you don't, you don't have to do them. If you want to, that's fine. But, I will be talking about both, but, like, up to you whether you actually want to do them.
I can't wait to choose the ending that Ryukishi doesn't want me to pick.
As a sign of rebellion.
As a sign of rebellion against what he's trying to tell me in the story.
Like, fuck your themes.
No, I
think
maybe the truest thing of rebellion would be to get to this point, get to the choice, and then decide to end the game and not play it ever again.
I would not make the choice.
To not make the choice? Because you want to decide your own truth.
I think Ryukishi would be very pleased to hear.
Yeah.
You're going to leave the cat box closed forever.
I think Ryukishi is very begrudgingly opening the cat box for us. Hence why there's two endings.
Yeah.
Because he wants to fucking fake you out with fake cat box. Right at the end, he's like, if I have to open it...
Here is my prediction. My prediction is that he will give you the choice to look in the cat box or not look in the cat box. The true ending with the tea parties will be to not look in it. That is my prediction. And that's supposed to be what you... that you showing that you don't want, that you don't care enough about it, and that's not for you. What I'm gonna do is I'm gonna look at the truth first and then look at the other ending.
I have a question. Do we get confirmed in red that the answer in the book is the truth of Rock and Jima? We definitely
it is the single truth.
Yes, it is the single truth.
What I read that as is that is the truth of Andra's timeline. Because obviously we're in a multi-parallel universe kind of style setup where there's lots of universes. We've only been shown one future and it's Andra's one. So like my understanding would be, you know, there's as many real truths as you want, but the one that led to Andra's present day is the single truth that is in the book.
Yeah. Can you confirm that, Courtney?
What is written in Ava's diary, the Book of Single Truth, is the truth of what happened in 1986.
To Anja.
Led to Anja's reality.
Yeah.
That's good, because the worst ending for Umineko would be that we were shown a cat box contents and then it was implied that it wasn't real.
We don't know, to be fair, that the final choice will be look in the cat box or not look in the cat box. Maybe the final choice will be don't look in the cat box, Anja dies, or don't look in the cat box, Anja lives, or something like that. Like, we might not get a job. Like, I don't think that's gonna happen, but like, I'm ready for anything at this point. Where's my third option? That's kiss a goat man.
Great question.
Abandon the story, kiss the goats.
Held tenderly in those strong, bulging arms. Be encased with that cheap suit material that ripples with muscle.
And bursts open at the seams.
For people so rich, no fucker in the Yushiromias can afford a decent tailor. They are all of them bursting out of their suits.
I thought you were about to say a decent therapist.
I don't expect them to have the like self-awareness to know that they need therapy, but they know they need clothes. Yet they cannot buy good ones. I'm not even talking about style. I am just talking about like fit. The rules of tailoring and the rules of the ways like suits are supposed to fit you. They shouldn't be like literally ripping. Oh,
how
God.
Are you gonna get? How sorry, are you gonna sorry show to do the the reader them bulging muscles if they've got properly fitting clothes though, Rowan?
Battler does not have bulging muscles.
Maybe he should.
I'm certain that there is some fan art out there of Battler with his beautifully carved bod.
It's funny because there's mostly fan art of Battler just being pathetic. There's lots of Battler crying. My favourite one recently has been Battler stuck in a glue trap. I enjoyed that immensely. I'm like, bulging muscles? Not really. He's a fly. He's stuck in a glue trap.
Once again, confirming my theory that the Umineko fandom wants to feel like Bonecastle Lambda Delta Beato.
Maybe I will feel like an evil sadistic witch after I finish this book. I want to burn.
Well, you'll inflict it on other people.
I feel like Battler.
Do you? That's nice.
I feel Umineko is my personal glue trap.
Ah. Do you know who I miss? Maria. It's been so long since we got any good Maria content. I miss her.
We did have her at the quiz game tricking Ange, trying to get her to do that ridiculous boat puzzle.
She was in the Golden Land scene.
Anja apologized. Because
Anja was like, oh, you really were a witch.
The bit where Anja apologized to Maria and was like, sorry for, you know, making you feel shitty for just trying to cope was quite nice. Skimmed over that a bit.
What if Anja had said, I understand why you use these coping mechanisms because people have to do what they can to move on from horrible events that have happened in their past. That's why I now have this new understanding of Ava. By the way, Ava, I understand you were trying your best. What if Anja had said that? That would have been nice.
Because that's not how Ryukishi writes.
Ugh.
I'm sorry. He just does not write
his,
like that.
This is the, this is the beautiful,
problem.
Like,
he needs to write
come
different.
Down to the
he
length,
needs to write different.
the Lath Witch has happened since like day one, which is I don't like Ryukishi's writing style. And I'm very afraid to say that is the biggest problem that I have with Umineko is I don't like Ryukishi's writing style. And so even when you have good arguments like that, which fair enough, like I'm just like, yep. But
yeah,
I do think
this exact story, even with all of the insane amount of characters and the exact same plot points, if given to a different writer, could have been so much better. it also could have been worse. It could have been worse, depending on who you gave it to. But
not to bring it up again, but that's why I'm hopeful for Silent Hill F, because again, Ryukishi's got some really fucking
He had some good ideas.
Really fucking good stuff. But my guy just like if given an editor, I think good.
What I'm saying is, I should have written Umineko.
I have a feeling that Umineko was kind of written for the satisfaction of Ryukichi. And it's just a coincidence that I
self-indulgent, a million word visual novel.
Yeah,
imagine
self-indulgent, a million word visual novel.
Write a million word.
And here I am having read
visual novel just for yourself.
I don't know. It's definitely him working through some stuff, I think. Well, we know it is.
Yeah,
the
themes give me the impression that he relates to some of this.
Yeah.
I will say, I hope it's helped him work through whatever he had needed to work through.
I hope he really got something out when he made Battler parade around naked on all fours.
Oh, God. I was trying to be sympathetic to him. It's gone. It's gone now. You waved it away.
hey, okay. Ryukishi can apparently afford a decent suit, so where's your fucking therapist, Bessie?
What, are you, like, googling pictures of this guy?
I just put Ryukishi suit, and the two images that I've got that appear to be Ryukishi in a suit, neither of them are like, that's kind of due to the way he's sat.
This is Rowan rates a suit hours, apparently. I wasn't expecting this either. Hilarious.
Since I adopted the he pronoun, I've been doing like dudes rock shit. I was in B&Q earlier buying a saw. I'm a car guy now. I like suits. We're going for it.
I'm not saying this man is the perfect writer, but I personally enjoy his style of writing. But I suppose that's because I am a big fan of works where like a lot of the themes are just left for you to kind of work out. Thinking back about my love of Revolutionary Girl Utena.
I think as well, like, the ambiguous elements of some of it, I would have more time for if he didn't spend a long time, like, beating you round the head with other stuff. It's like, some things he massively over-explains and, like discussions that I'm like, okay, you didn't need to have this here, like this doesn't add anything. And then sometimes he just skims over complete like really important stuff. And so it just it just seems like where he focuses is like wildly inconsistent.
If you have a taste for long and overwrought things, that's like fair enough. The problem is the sort of the thing that I take issue with that I think is like a stylistic thing but is the thing that gives me the most issues is the like obfuscating thing where when it's time to say something he'll still like go so poetic it's unclear, and I realize that's a stylistic thing, but that's I think pinpointing where my issue with Ryukishi's style beyond like I just don't have a taste for this.
I honestly don't know how I'd have got through this if I was just reading it by myself without other people to like help me work out what the fuck is going on and what my ideas are on stuff. Like I think I'd have just been reading through this being like it was all washing over me and I wouldn't have been taking anything in anymore and I'd have probably just stopped reading it.
Yeah, notwithstanding like how far I think I would have gotten, if I'd gotten to this point without having had the pod to discuss it, I don't know that I would know what was going on.
Mm. Yeah, and I understand that, and this is one of the reasons why I wanted to do this podcast, was because I think it's quite nice as a work to have a companion piece like this, too. Because there's a lot to discuss.
Yeah, if you decide to read Umineko, don't read it on its own. Commit to a companion podcast of many more hours of your time. We can do humor, which is different to Ryukishi.
That
so
is
there
true.
You go. There's
we
that added
funny.
Element of it there. So.
I'm gonna leave us with these closing thoughts. Which is, please imagine if you will, me in a bar with my co-workers. It was one of my co-workers' 25th birthday recently. We were on an away job, so we all went down to the local pub, and I was sat in the local pub, and we were talking about cardboard cutouts of people. And so I brought up images of and told everybody, deep in my cups that I was, about the giant models guy. You know the one.
Oh.
We've discussed it before. How did this go down with your colleague?
They had a lot of logistical questions, which I think is like the politest way to be like, how the fuck do you know about this? Yeah. They were like, don't they collapse and fall over? And I was like, yes, frequently. I'm not building them myself, I promise.
They collapse.
Guy on the
they collapse. They get structurally unsound because I kiss them too much and the cardboard gets all soggy.
Anyway, I'm looking forward to reading the ending of Umineko and it providing me with lots of answers and clarification.
I am.
As I'm sure I will feel next
I would also like to preface by saying we will do one more episode of Umineko after we finish reading, kind of a wrap-up similar to our intermission that we did. Whatever it was, like, fucking 8 months ago. if there are any more questions you have about Umineko, I will answer them to the best of my ability. So don't be worried if there's stuff that you feel is unanswered. I will try my best to answer it.
That's Courtney saying, don't worry, there are things that are unanswered.
What unanswered things am I, Umineko? Never.
Yeah, I'll make a list, okay?
I wanna put a pin in here whilst I'm not angry at Umineko. Okay. I do think that, like, mystery and intrigue and ambiguity at the ending of things can be good and interesting and well done and fun. Yes. I do not think ambiguity for it, like, in itself is a bad ending of something. More on this next week.
As stated, however, before, we are dubious about Ryukishi's ability to determine when ambiguity is good and when it is frustrating.
Yes. Exactly, yes.
I can't believe this. End of an era next time.
I know. It's crazy. It's our last reading, so make sure you tune in.
How to Fall Boyfriend next.
And also, if you want to do another film, Rowan, in the in between, if you have time, we can also do that.
I'll think about it. Hmm. I threatened Gone Girl for a bit because I was like, oh, I want it to be like themes. And as my partner very rightly said, Gone Girl is Fight Club for women. Fucking incredible take. So maybe I will do a film. I've just got to think of one.
Well. On that note, thank you and good night.
Thanks, guys.
Goodbye.
Bye.